It's September 25th, 1998, and this is an evening talk on Kundalini with Lillian Van Voorhis.
Oh no, laughter's definitely appropriate. Well, I'm going to talk about Kundalini tonight, and it's a subject that I know a lot about from personal experience. When I was younger, like teenage years and early 20s, I didn't know what was happening to me, but I knew that it was a very intense, a very large experience, and that every time it happened, I was definitely changed. And I couldn't find anyone to really explain this to me. And then in my late 20s, I came across Muktananda's work. And I'm telling you, he really saved my life many times over. Because some of the things that occur during a full Kundalini arising, are things that make you feel, or the mind can interpret as illness or as something's really wrong with you. But in truth, this is a natural process. It's a human process. It's an evolutionary energy that tries to get us to become fully human or to become fully awakened. And for a person who lets the energy rise up and stay arisen, as Muktananda did, you have one who becomes enlightened. And there are many stories in the literature of the teachers in the East, the masters, the gurus, many of the mystics and saints who had that experience on a daily basis through their whole life once it rose up. And I'll tell you some of the stories that have kind of impacted me as we go along here tonight. But I want to start out, I'll tell you a little bit about what it is, what it feels like, what you can do in your own life to have this experience naturally without forcing it. And I've got a handout that we'll talk a little bit about later, which is some of the signs and symptoms of this experience, so you can perhaps catch it when it's happening. What often happens for most people is that when they're in the midst of this, they will label it as an illness or as something that they need to do to themselves, and that indeed stops the process. So I think the secret is in recognizing the experience and then just trusting it and allowing it to move through the body, through all of your bodies, spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical, and to just stay present with that. And sometimes that can be difficult. The word Kundalini is from the Sanskrit kundula, which means coil, or sometimes like a coiled serpent. And it rests in the sacrum, the triangular bone that is at the very base of the spine. We think of that as our tailbone, I guess. And it lies there and rises, I believe, naturally up and down the spinal column or throughout the body through our whole life. Most people are completely unaware of its presence, but it's truly responsible for everything that you see in the world. If you look at anything in this room, every molecule of anything physical is literally suffused with Shakti or Kundalini, which is the life force. And so she is responsible for our biological growth and development, as well as our post-biological growth and development. That is the inner awareness, things that you might label as psychic experiences or wisdom, intuition. All of those things are signs of the activity of Kundalini at the inner levels and the person maturing and growing and developing. It has a lot of different names through all cultures across the world, and I really think that there isn't a culture on earth that isn't aware of this energy. They may have a different name for it or a different way of looking at it or labeling it, but it's the same experience. So in Japan, it's known as Ki, in China as Qi. In this culture, in the West, I think it's Holy Spirit, because it is the active creative force of the Creator. And you can find this referred to in Africa, in Hawaii, in all of the what we think of as primitive cultures. They all have their language for the same experience. And when you think of things like the dervishes who whirl to raise energy, and the Sufis, just many of the different religious groups around the world, you have the same thing happening. It's to bring up this energy and to have an awareness of it. And they realize then that they are more of who they were meant to be when they're in the midst of that energy. So when Kundalini is activated and you are aware of it, you know that you are in the midst of your own personal transformation. It's an exciting time. It can also be a frightening time, an emotional time, because your interpretation of the experience on the intellectual level and on the emotional level really determine how you will sense it. And I think this is why in the ancient literature of the world, it talks about how you better not ever try to do this on your own. You must always have a guru to initiate you, or you must have gone through something like a mystery school process before the Hierophant will actually help you raise this energy or initiate you into a Kundalini awareness of your own. But I think that it's happening all the time. There's a quote in one of the books that I have at home from Jung, who said well over 50 years ago now that he thought Kundalini would never happen in the West. It was unknown, unrecorded, unheard of in the Western world, and that it would take 1,000 years for it to happen. So I would love for him to be present now and see how many of us have really awakened and have had this experience in our lives. And I think he'd be very pleasantly surprised. So I have a little quote that I want to share with you from Muktananda. He says, Kundalini, or Shakti, which is an Eastern term for Kundalini, or the goddess, Kundalini, or Shakti, is she who has the power to create the universe. All letters are composed by her, and she brings sound, language, and alphabets into existence. She is the willpower of the Creator, or God. She is ever young because she was always playing. I love that, that idea, you know, of the goddess in that way. And her play is creation, sustenance, and dissolution of this world. It is she who, to quench our thirst, became water. And to satisfy our hunger, she became food. All that we see or don't see is nothing but Kundalini. She is the supreme energy in all life. And all of this is the outer aspect. It is the inner aspect that we must awaken. And when the inner aspect of Kundalini is awakened and rises up Sushumna, which is the central canal in the spinal column, then we are able to experience that inner spiritual world. And then you have the experience of having one foot in this third dimension and another foot in all the other dimensions that exist simultaneously with us. Go ahead. Sorry. Oh, that's no problem. No problem. I want to talk with you a little bit about my own experience, because I think putting this in personal terms will help you kind of get a handle or a feel for what I mean when I say I think it's happening in our lives all the time. I grew up in the 60s and went to college in the late 60s. And when I was probably 12 or 13, I knew I was very, very different. And I thought maybe the way I could be understood would be to take myself out of the world and go someplace where I thought, meaning a convent, I would really be accepted and understood, because I'd read the lives of the saints. And some of the things that happened to them were happening to me. I didn't feel saintly or anything like that, but I was hearing voices, seeing things. I knew things about people when I was with them. My intuitive awareness developed very early, and some of the other extremely vivid dreams and things like that all acted as a source of discomfort for me by that age, because you want to fit in. And then on top of that, you have to deal with puberty, which is the outward sign of a very awakened and moving Kundalini. It is one of the biological processes that she's directly responsible for. And of course, about junior high level, you know, you're dealing with who you are as a person, all your fears, all your dreams, and then you have the sexual energies begin to move and have their life and their force, and trying to figure out about all of that. It's a lot that happens to a young person. So you'll see a lot of teenagers, and I was definitely one of them, who are struggling to find their place and who they are, what life means, and all of that. Others, you will see, take that energy and move it directly into the sexual experience. And we're still hearing a lot about that, and we will, I suppose, throughout our lives, you know, as things go on. I think I was about 17 when I had my first, what I would call, dark night of the soul. I had 3 days where I didn't speak, I didn't eat, and I didn't sleep. And no one around me seemed to really be there. I seemed to be moving in a world that was other than this one. And I heard a very strong voice direct me about not being fearful of this experience. And my mother was convinced that I was dropping into psychosis and did take me to a doctor at one point. But thankfully, after the 3 day period, a 3 is always really important in my life. And it took 3 days for me to move through that experience from a very fearful state into a realization that I was here for a purpose. I would figure out what that was, and I would live out whatever that purpose was. I wasn't going to be destroyed by whatever happened to me. And I did come through that. And luckily, the doctor that I went through was very conservative and no prescription medicine or anything. So the process moved from a feeling of being very contracted when I was in a fearful state into a very expansive, light-filled state. That just gave me a lot of strength to get through high school at that last year and move on into my life. I think probably for myself, another initiatory experience for me was at age 6 when my brother died of cancer at age 5. And I think I've talked about this before, but I sensed that Glenn and I had a commitment to a particular kind of work. He left, and his leaving really initiated me into a deeper understanding. That was really some of the earliest experiences I had of seeing angels and other beings, you know. And I think a lot of that ability to stay awake as I grew older was because of that first very traumatic experience. And that is one way that Kundalini can be awakened. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But anyway, when I was 19, I had another very strong experience of this energy. I would feel like I was just shaking all over, but when I'd hold my hands out, they were still. But I felt this massive vibration throughout my body, and it really frightened me that time, and I kind of repressed it and tried to keep it, you know, down. It would come up. You can feel this moving up through the whole flesh of your body, you know, especially up your back, generally speaking. And what happened was I developed Bell's palsy because it did come up about to here, and I wouldn't let it come out any further. And I had a massive spasming of the back of my neck and my skull, and out of that came Bell's palsy. Now, when I did go to doctors, I was told that I'd been in a very freezing cold place that had developed it. And there was nothing like that in my experience. And it wasn't until many years later when I looked back and saw what the connection was, that it was really a repression of this energy which caused the body to move into this palsied state. So I lost my hearing on one side, one eye didn't work well, and, you know, I just had no feeling, and I was paralyzed on one side of my face from the top of the skull to the base of my throat. Medically, I was told I would not be cured because it was a massive paralysis, and they worked on me for probably 6 weeks with no results at all. So I went home, and I decided that something else was happening here. I had read all of Casey's work by that time. I didn't know what Kundalini was still at the time, but I thought if I went back into that inner process and trusted that, that possibly something would shift, and that's exactly what happened. And it took 6 months for the full out-picturing of that, or complete return, to happen to me. I thought that was so interesting because a month for every week of the therapy in the hospital kind of thing. It was interesting, 2 sixes. But anyway, you can, when you repress this energy, when it really wants to move through you, you can bring on certain illnesses as a result of stopping it and not understanding. And I think a lot of the people that are in mental hospitals or state hospital are there probably as a result of a misunderstanding of an energetic process that's happening. I also suspect that schizophrenia has really got a lot to do with a Kundalini movement in the person's life that somehow got skewed or stopped or over-medicated or whatever. I don't know. I think we're going to know more about that as medicine continues to evolve in the next century. and I think we'll hear more about it. So those are three major events I can recall. The other really major event, and I'll talk a little bit about this later, but the biggest one was when I was 24 and had my first child. I had a massive awakening during birth and for months thereafter. And that is a very natural way for Kundalini to come up. But most women aren't educated about that. And when the body begins to tremble and shake for some women in labor, that's a natural outpicturing of that, the forces that are present, you know, during the birth process. That's called kriyas in the Eastern tradition. And a lot of people who have Kundalini, in fact, a woman that I worked with about a year ago in the Walnut Creek area, has had massive posturing and shaking of her body. Her doctors tried to convince her she had an onset of Parkinson's. She's very young, and she very luckily met someone who knew about Kundalini and recognized some of the yogic positions that she would naturally move into, and helped her understand that her process is normal, and gave her a lot to read, and put her in touch with other teachers who knew about this. So she's had the process off and on in a very physical way for at least 3 years of her life. And I think she's being prepared to teach and to share with others, probably very specifically about Kundalini, when her process calms down and integrates through all of her bodies, which it will do. So what does it feel like? There are two really specific ways, I would say, that most experiences fall into. There's the very gentle awakening or rising, where you kind of feel this tingling sensation or this soft warmth begin to kind of flow, maybe through the whole body, than specifically starting, you know, down at your bottom and rising up the spine with heat or something. And that's, I think, the experience that most people have in their lives, but they just don't know that's what it is. My husband has had that, and he'll say to me, I don't know what this is, but I'm feeling this stuff kind of coming up. And I'll say, oh, well, that's Kundalini. He'll laugh and go, oh, Lil, that's you. You know, that's what you do. I don't think that's it. Another thing that he often has is itching of the body when he doesn't have a rash or an allergy. He hasn't eaten anything that he's really allergic to. He's not allergic to anything really anyway. And it usually starts on his back, and he'll want to scratch his back, and then he'll scratch his arms, and then it'll be his legs. And so I'll say something to him about, well, that's just Kundalini moving, you know. And it's hard for him to accept that, but that is one of the manifestations that some people have physically when this energy starts to move. So so that's one way. It can be really gentle and soft like that. But the other way is where it really roars up. You have like a freight train experience. And generally you begin to feel heat on your, you know, where you're sitting or in your back. And then it becomes very, very hot. And it goes all the way up the back, and you'll feel it flushing up into your face. When that kind of experience happens for me, this whole area will turn bright red. And when I've had massages in the past and the root really opens or Kundalini really starts to move up, I've had the person massaging me say, I don't know what's happening, but right at the base of your spine, it's so hot I can hardly touch you, and it's turning bright red. And, you know, if I didn't know what that was, I think I might be scared, but I always tell them, you know, not to be afraid of it, and this is what's happening, and just allow it to happen. The biggest thing is to learn to trust this process, that it's natural, that it cannot destroy you, it does not want to destroy you. It wants to assist you to become who you said you would be this lifetime. That's really what it is. And let's see, I have a little note here about hot flashes. I am going through the experience of menopause. I've never had a hot flash, but I have had what I would call Kundalini really rushing up very fast. And sometimes it will sit, you know, right in my throat area or right in the face, so that my ears swell up, my face gets real red and hot, and, you know, earrings will blow off my ears and things like that. So I suspect that what medicine has labeled hot flashes are really this wondrous energy that's come up to assist woman to go through this transformation and move into her wisdom years. I really think that that's what's happening there. Let's see. I've got a little note to read you a little bit. This is a very old book, but it still stands the test of time. And in this book, the author talks about the reports from different persons who've had the experience of Kundalini and what they said about it. So there's a couple I want to share with you. And one is from Swami Narayananda in 1960, and this is what he says. There is a burning up the back and over the whole body. Kundalini's entrance into Sushumna, the central spinal canal, occurs with pain in the back. One feels a creeping sensation from the toes, and sometimes it shakes the whole body. The rising is felt like that of an ant creeping up slowly over the body towards the head. Its ascent is felt like the wiggling of a snake or a bird hopping from place to place. And that's that softer or gentler experience I was speaking about. And let's see, the other one I think is Muktananda or Krishna's experience. Let's see. Muktananda said of one of his experience that he had involuntary movements, flows of energy through the body, unusual breathing patterns, inner lights and sounds, visions, voices, and many other extraordinary experiences. My body was heated up and my head became heavy. The spinal base was rent with pain. Now, personally, I've never experienced the extremes of pain in the spine. I might feel like somebody's kind of stuck me with a little sharp spear, a sharp little thing, but never long-lasting pain. And I think part of that is when you recognize what's happening, you can ask for the experience to be gentle, loving, and the more you trust it, I think, the less painful it really is. The more you drop into states of fear, the more the experience can become very intense. Any of you who've read Gopi Krishna's works about his experience know how intense and painful it can be, because he went through that for years. Excruciating headaches and nausea and diarrhea and stomach pain and just amazing bodily stuff that he went through, none of which has been my experience, thankfully. Muktananda also said that he smelled perfume during meditation. He tasted nectar and heard the sounds of ocean surf, thunder, brook murmurs, the crackle of fire, drums and conch shells, bells and bird calls. And I can attest to these sounds. They are part of that inner experience. There have been a few times when I've sat in meditation and I've begun to feel that rise up. And sometimes I've heard a clap like a great thunder. And sometimes it's like a door being slammed. Other times it sounds like fairy bells tinkling. Or the ocean is very common, what I would interpret as the ocean. But I think what you're really hearing is that sacred sound of the universe that our intellect interprets in different ways. That sound that goes throughout all of creation. And then Gopi Krishna, in one of his lesser intense experiences, wrote, I think this is 1937, his first experience happened when he was 34. He was an agnostic in an Indian family, but he was really interested in meditation. So he faithfully meditated for years. And finally, at the age of 34, he had this experience of Kundalini. I distinctly felt an incomparable, blissful sensation in all of my nerves moving from the tips of my fingers and toes and other parts of the trunk and limbs toward the spine, where concentrated and intensified, it mounted upwards with a still more exquisitely pleasant feeling to pour into the upper region of the brain. And that was his first experience. And he got scared kind of after that happened to him a couple of times. And he really kind of went into that almost psychosis-like state where he felt like he was being ripped apart and thought that there maybe was something really wrong with him mentally, thought he might even die because sometimes the heat was so intense. This is Kundalini Psychosis or Transcendence by Sanella, Lee Sanella. It's a really old one, but it still stands up because he kind of pulled together a lot of the research that was done in the 60s or 70s, I think. Not sure when it was written. Okay, now I want to pass out this little signs and symptoms, which it's not little. There's about 2 pages of it. There's a lot that can occur, but I thought I would share this with you. because I know that you will recognize some of these as having been your own experience. And these are all common manifestations. Some of my own comments about what's happened to me, I think, are on here too, but... So sometimes when Kundalini is moving, you're going to have muscle twitches, cramps, or spasms. I've had the experience of having my feet for no reason or my legs just suddenly cramp up. And usually I know when I'm in the midst of this, even if it's very subtle, because I've had enough experience with it. But sometimes the cramping of parts of your body is nothing more than that energy moving into an area where energy is blocked or you're holding old thought patterns that need to be released. Sometimes your body will feel out of control. It's like your whole mechanism is being rewired and restructured. And I notice for myself, my hips often don't move like they normally do, and my legs feel like I'm learning to walk all over again. That's really common. Energy surges are the feeling of immense electricity, that vibration that I was talking about, that's common. The itching, vibrating, prickling, tingling, stinging, or crawling sensation. Intense heat or cold. Your tailbone might feel like it's on fire, or you may feel great heat pour out of another body part. Very, very common. Bodily movements, sudden jerking or tremors, shaking, feeling an inner force moving the body into postures and making it move in unusual ways. Gopi Krishna talks about this. All of the great Eastern teachers talk about the body feels like it must sit in a certain way, or if you cannot sit in a full lotus, suddenly you're able to do that when you're in the midst of a Kundalini uprising. The hips open, you know, the whole lower part of your body just relaxes and opens very easily. For myself, I've had the experience of, while I'm in the midst of this, I go to the store to get food or something, and I'm standing in line, and I can no longer stand upright. And so I will usually end up in a squatting position, you know, and kind of moving around and rocking. And I know that looks really weird to people around me, but I can't express to you how good that feels when the energy is just moving and the body needs to open and you need to move it in certain ways to allow the energy to go where it needs to go. So I've done that. My husband's been with me a couple of times when that's happened, and I've told him, I try to be kind of subtle about it, but you know, it looks pretty funny, I'm sure, but it feels wonderful. Your eating habits will usually change. If you're a person who's meat and potatoes, you're going to desire much lighter diet when Kundalini is up, like vegetables and fruits. You're going to find that you don't crave the things you normally do if you're a person who has, like me, a craving for chocolate. I love that stuff. But when I'm in the midst of that, I don't even think about chocolate. It's just not there. Chocolate and salt, I think, are two big ones. Your sleep pattern might change. I've had lots of experience with sleeping only 3 hours a night, getting up at 2 a.m. and writing or reading or putzing around the house while Bert sleeps, and I have my full energy the next day, you know, until midnight again. I usually go to bed around 11:30 or midnight and get up about 6:30 the next morning. But when I'm in the midst of this experience, I don't need that much sleep. There's so much happening on the inner level. It's like you just need a little respite for the body, and then you're in it again. Headaches, pressures in the head may border on migraine or be migraine. This is one of the most common signs, and when I was a teenager and through my 20s, I often felt like my head was exploding. I might be sitting nursing the babies, and this would suddenly begin to happen, and sometimes it would be as though I were having my own nuclear explosion because the experience of light is so intense. You see everything around you much more brilliantly than you do with just your normal sight. And the inner experience of light is extremely intense. Even with the eyes open, I would have experiences where light would seem to be popping or exploding. And I often stopped the energy and would have a violent headache. And even went to the doctor once and tried to describe the experience, and they talked about a brain tumor. And I left. I knew that wasn't it. But, you know, the intellect, with its need to know and understand and to label everything, got me to the doctor anyway.